Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 9, Episode 5, The Puppet Masters. We will begin today's episode with a bit of a backtrack, but I promise we will soon catch up. Last season, we briefly followed the exploits of one Ōchi Masahiro, who took up the cause of the Yamana clan during the Onin War after their chieftain, Yamana Sōzen, had died. Hopefully you'll remember that Ōchi Masahiro chose the losing side in the Onin War and eventually acknowledged his bad luck by burning his capital residence before escorting his army out of Kyoto itself. This defeat was not permanent, however, and his decision to withdraw was likely a deciding factor in the Ōchi clan's continued survival. Based in Suō province, on the very southwestern edge of Chugoku, the Ōchi clan was headquartered in the city of Yamaguchi, located along Suō province's southern coast. This location was extremely advantageous not only for keeping an eye on the developments in Kyushu, but also for later receiving traders and visitors from far-off lands. We'll discuss several influential visitors many episodes from now. One of the many signs that things had drastically changed from their former state was that Ōchi Masahiro returned to his duties as a provincial shugo, seemingly without any consequences from the shogunate. Granted, the Bakufu had years of rebuilding ahead before it could think of enforcing discipline even in Kansai, much less the western edge of Chugoku. In fact, Masahiro greatly contributed to its rebuilding efforts and soon was back in the good graces of the shogunate's top brass. During the Onin War, Kyoto could no longer play host to the many poets, musicians, artists, entertainers, and other creative minds who had formerly been the lifeblood of the capital. Thus, said creative minds traveled throughout the country seeking alternative patrons for their art, and the culture of the capital spread far and wide throughout the land. Clever daimyo saw an opportunity to bolster their own reputations as cultivators of art and beauty, creating a nationwide situation not entirely unlike the politics of aesthetics that fueled the Renaissance in Europe. One of those clever daimyo was Ōchi Masahiro, who actively recruited artists and entertainers of nearly every discipline to stay in Yamaguchi City, which was fast becoming the capital of his own personal domain. In addition to Suō Province, which served as his primary headquarters, he also ruled over neighboring Nagato Province to the north and a portion of Aki Province to the east, as well as Buzen and Chikugo provinces in northern Kyushu. The Kyushu provinces were added to his domain after the Onin War through conflicts with the Shoni clan, in which their local rivals called upon the Ōchi clan for military assistance against their oppressors. By the 1480s, the Ōchi clan was the most powerful and influential of all their peers in western Japan. Unlike some of the more cynical daimyo of his time who would give lip service to the shogunate without ever actually providing aid, Masahiro and his son Yoshioki answered Ashikaga Yoshihisa's call to arms against the Rokkaku clan in Omi province. When Yoshihisa met his untimely end and Yoshitane ascended the shogunal throne, the Ōchi continued giving support both on the battlefield and in politics. Masahiro walked a delicate balance of preserving his personal authority in his home territory while also concerning himself in shogunate affairs without becoming overly entangled in either. Through his connections in northern Kyushu, he enticed Chinese and Korean trading vessels to start making regular stops at Yamaguchi. Under his leadership, the Ōchi clan had gone international, and the burgeoning middle class, many of whom had formerly resided in Kyoto or other part of Kansai, prospered as new goods were introduced from Ming China and Joseon Korea. In 1492, Ōchi Yoshioki went to Omi province at the behest of his father to do battle with the Rokkaku clan, who were still in poor relations with the Bakufu. In 1493, while he and his warriors were still in the field, the Meiyo coup occurred, and Yoshioki withdrew his forces to Settsu province on the eastern edge of Chugoku and northeast of the capital to see what the final outcome would be. While he probably intended to assault Kyoto if the shogun was overthrown, Hosokawa Masamoto took precautions to discourage such rash action. Yoshioki's sister was taken hostage by one of Masamoto's associates, and Ōuchi Masahiro sent strict instructions to Yoshioki to withdraw to Yamaguchi as soon as possible. Yoshioki stalled at first, but eventually complied. The administrators of Kyoto were no doubt extremely relieved that the capital, which had just been rebuilt, would not be put to the torch again just yet. In 1495, Ōuchi Masahiro died, and Yoshioki became the new daimyo of the Ōuchi clan. He undertook the typical intrigues and activities of a Sengoku daimyo, involving himself in the succession disputes of his neighbors in hopes of dominating them through kingmaking, foiling plots by vassals to support his younger brother as daimyo of the Ōuchi, and overseeing a flourishing trade economy. In 1500, a most unexpected but extremely welcome visitor came to Yamaguchi, the ousted shogun Yoshitane. Though he had been captured during the Meiyo coup, he managed to escape custody and fled to Etchu province in the north. There he courted the Hatakeyama clan and the Asakura clan into supporting his return to power. At first they attempted to negotiate with Hosokawa Masamoto, but after many years of stall tactics and endless delays, Yoshitane proposed a military solution, with both the Asakura and Hatakeyama samurai backing his play. When they were soundly defeated in battle in 1500, the panicked Yoshitane fled to Suo province, where he reunited with Ōuchi Yoshioki, who welcomed him with open arms. Kanrei Hosokawa Masamoto was, to put it mildly, extremely unhappy about this development. He sent correspondence to the Ōtomo, Shoni, Kikuchi, and Aso clans, urging them to attack the Ōuchi at once, and even sent a similar letter to Ōuchi Takahiro, Yoshioki's younger brother, who had long since taken shelter with the Ōtomo clan. Not content with the authority of the Bakufu alone, Masamoto also arranged for the new sovereign, Emperor Go Kashiwabara, to write an imperial edict ordering anyone who was able to oppose Ōuchi Yoshioki. It has been some time since we even mentioned emperors on this podcast, and I acknowledge the irony. After the Nambokucho War, the sovereigns were generally relegated to performing the ceremonial duties of their office and rubber-stamping whatever the Bakufu set out for them to ratify. However, the shifting power between rival shoguns would create further opportunities for Emperor Go Kashiwabara to exercise power, so stay tuned for that. Don't get too excited, we're not talking about a full imperial restoration, but still, you know, emperors. If you're wondering whether an official imperial condemnation still carried any weight among the samurai, the answer appears to be not really. The Ōtomo, Shoni, Kikuchi, and Aso clans did attack the Ōuchi clan's holdings in Kyushu and Chugoku, but they probably would have done this anyway, and there's little evidence that the imperial voice spurred them to any greater heights of heroism. The Ōuchi clan not only generally held out against these incursions, they encouraged exiled shogun Yoshitane to issue his own official edicts against the pretenders holding power in the capital. They even assembled a sort of Bakufu in exile in Suo province, complete with retainers and officials drawn from Ōuchi Yoshioki's client clans. Eventually, a peace agreement was reached with the Ōtomo clan, as well as the Shoni, who each kinda sorta acknowledged the authority of the exiled shogun Yoshitane by negotiating this peace in the first place. The Kikuchi and Aso had been more or less subdued by this point, which allowed Yoshioki and Yoshitane to set their eyes on the real objective, the capital. By 1504, Yoshioki had already begun levying taxes to pay for the expense of a Kansai expedition with the stated purpose of restoring Ashikaga Yoshitane to the throne. However, in a few years the task would become remarkably easier, as the succession crisis which the Hosokawa clan had avoided for so long would finally arrive, seemingly with interest for the years they'd managed to stay unified and avoid such pointless, self-destructive conflicts. You'll recall that while Hosokawa Masamoto never married or produced biological children, he had adopted three sons, Sumiyuki, Sumitomo, and Takakuni. Sumiyuki had been adopted first, but then disinherited in favor of Sumitomo. As so often happens, ambitious retainers plotted with Sumiyuki over how they might seize the reins of the Hosokawa clan in spite of his brothers. In 1507, they made their move. While Hosokawa Masamoto was taking a bath, possibly as part of a cleansing ritual from his beloved ascetic Shugendo practices, he was killed by three of his own bodyguards, who were acting on behalf of Sumiyuki. With Masamoto out of the way, the office of Kanrei was up for grabs by his claimants, and Sumiyuki's handlers acted quickly to shove him into position. As coups go, this one comes off a little half-baked, considering that the plotters had allowed Sumitomo and many of his partisans to escape to Omi province, where they proceeded to rally warriors to their banner in the name of liberating Kyoto from Sumiyuki's illegitimate rule. Hosokawa Sumiyuki ruled over the capital for 40 days before he went with his army to face off against his brother's partisans in Omi province. The fighting went badly for Sumiyuki and he died, leaving Sumitomo to claim the mantle of Kanrei. But wait, there's more. Sumitomo was not actually very ambitious, but was being manipulated into these actions by Miyoshi Yukinaga, who intended to control the nation through controlling the Kanrei, who controlled the shogun, who controlled the imperial court. It's a little reminiscent of the 1995 Martin Scorsese film Casino. The dealers are watching the players, the boxmen are watching the dealers, the floormen are watching the boxmen, the pit bosses are watching the floormen, and so on. George Sansom describes the situation as fantastic, if not farcical. While Hosokawa Takakuni had assisted in his older brother's efforts against Sumiyuki, he seems to have been wise enough to know that this was a short-term alliance at best. Given the political tenor of the Sengoku period, it was probably a matter of time before Sumitomo arranged Takakuni's death. The Bakufu, so-called, attempted to cobble together a peace delegation to intercept Ōuchi Yoshioki, who was still on his way, but Takakuni decided at this point to make his own maneuver for power. He and his followers left Kyoto in secret and raised an army, while at the same time corresponding with the approaching Ōuchi Yoshioki, who would soon be entering Kansai. Miyoshi Yukinaga and Hosokawa Sumitomo were in an unenviable position. They knew they did not have the necessary manpower to defend the capital against their enemies, so they fled. Though they would periodically raise a modest force and threaten the new regime, they generally lost every engagement thereafter and were little more than an annoyance to the restored shogun Ashikaga Yoshitane. Yes, you heard that correctly. Ashikaga Yoshizumi had fled to Omi province with his new patrons, and Yoshitane was restored as the rightful shogun by Emperor Go Kashiwabara. As a side note, during Yoshitane's first reign, he was known as Ashikaga Yoshitada, and it was only during his second reign that he took the name Yoshitane. I referred to him as Yoshitane the entire time, for clarity's sake. The newly ousted shogun Yoshizumi did not fare well in exile, and he repeatedly encouraged his supporters to retake the capital so he could be restored. Every attempt failed. He even tried in 1510 to arrange for Yoshitane's assassination by poisoning, but his efforts came to nothing. In 1511, he grew ill and died. Although he had been removed from the picture, two of his sons would serve as shoguns in the future. While you might be expecting Ōuchi Yoshioki to be named as the new Kanrei, he remained, unfortunately, ineligible for the office. Hosokawa Takakuni was installed, and Yoshioki was named as his Kanrei Dai, or deputy, and also named as the Shugo of Yamashiro Province, the province which hosts Kyoto. By most accounts, Ōuchi Yoshioki is something of a bright spot in an especially dark time. He levied taxes on the shogun's behalf and actually funded both the Bakufu and the impoverished imperial court with the proceeds. However, Yoshioki's enemies in northern Kyushu and western Chugoku were emboldened by his absence, and he was forced to try and organize a defensive war by correspondence. The activities of Sumitomo and his Miyoshi clan puppeteers prevented Yoshioki from being able to leave the capital for many years. Even after the death of Ashikaga Yoshizumi, the threat of incursion by the Miyoshi and their allies remained high. In 1512, possibly in an attempt to keep Yoshioki in the capital, Emperor Go Kashiwabara went around the shogunate to give him a generous court rank promotion. The shogun eventually acknowledged the honor, and while Go Kashiwabara Tenno was the most politically active emperor of his day, this action represents the apex of his power. As bad as things had gotten under a shogunate, it does not seem like anyone was truly interested in restoring direct imperial rule. Yoshioki also received official approval for his trade with Ming China, which continued to bring money into his domains in the west. Unfortunately, his relations with Kanrei Hosokawa Takakuni became strained, as Takakuni grew frustrated that he was made to share power. The issue of official trade would eventually force the two into a diplomatic conflict years later. In 1517, conflict erupted in Chugoku when the Mori clan, who had become vassals of the Ōuchi, were under threat of invasion by the Takeda clan of Aki Province, not to be confused with the Takeda clan of Kai Province. Though the two were distantly related, they were not acting in concert at this time. The Aki Takeda had also been vassals of the Ōuchi, but their ambitions nurtured by Yoshioki's absence, they opted to swear fealty to the Amago clan, an emerging power in the Chugoku region whom Yoshioki likely was keeping close track of. The Mori clan urgently requested help from Ōuchi Yoshioki, but with much of the Ōuchi army engaged in conflicts on Kyushu and the remainder serving him in Kyoto, he had no real help to offer. By this point, the Mori clan had come under the leadership of one Mori Motonari, a name I will be repeating many times before the end of this season. He had cultivated a reputation for somewhat reckless bravery in his youth, and in 1516, the previous year, his father had died suddenly, and he was now effectively the daimyo of the Mori. If the Takeda clan thought they might take advantage of this turnover, they made a grave miscalculation. The Aki Takeda clan raised an army of around 5,000 and marched against the Yoshikawa clan, who were close allies of the Mori. They besieged Arita Castle and made armed forays into Mori territory, raiding and burning as they went. Knowing that no help was forthcoming from the Ōuchi, the 20-year-old Mori Motonari opted to take on the Aki Takeda warriors directly, raising his own army and fighting in coordination with his brother, Mori Mototsune. They took the Aki Takeda army somewhat by surprise at first and managed to score some early victories. Then the Takeda regrouped and pressed hard against the Mori warband. Contemporary accounts claim that the Mori warriors were beginning to flag when Motonari himself encouraged them to keep fighting, which gave them the endurance they needed to stay in the fight long enough for the Takeda to lose heart and flee. The conflict was later called the Battle of Arita Nakaide, and Mori Motonari's long-shot victory earned him a fair bit of acclaim from his neighbors. Ōuchi Yoshioki was probably glad to hear of the Aki Takeda clan's defeat, but in the months and years that ensued, he probably regretted not having the chance to take credit for the victory himself. Under Motonari's leadership, the Mori clan would gradually grow in power and influence throughout central Chugoku and beyond. The following year, 1518, the burgeoning Amago clan felt confident enough to move against Ōuchi domains in western Chugoku. By 1519, the situation in his home provinces was becoming desperate, and Ōuchi Yoshioki felt he had no choice but to return. He departed Kyoto, and soon the Amago warriors withdrew from Ōuchi land. Under his leadership, the Ōuchi launched punitive expeditions against the Aki Takeda, but his long absence had sown doubt among the many clans of Aki that the Ōuchi could be relied upon as protectors. Within a few years, the Amago clan would stage a huge march through Aki province, forcing smaller clans to either swear fealty to them or be destroyed, and even longtime vassals like Morimoto Nari would bend to such coercion and turn on the Ōuchi. Those particular events deserve their own episode, however, so rest assured we will return to Chugoku some episodes from now to see how skilled the young Mori chieftain becomes at the great game of Gekokujo. Upon the departure of Ōuchi Yoshioki from Kyoto, Hosokawa Takakuni had the opportunity he had been waiting for to seize power. In spite of Ashikaga Yoshitane's objections, the Bakufu vested Takakuni with broad executive powers to make decisions on the shogun's behalf. In 1521, just 2 years after Yoshioki's departure, the restored shogun fled from the capital to the island of Awaji, which lies between Kansai and Shikoku. From there, he took shelter in Awa province on Shikoku Island, from where he hoped to rally a great army to remove the tyrant Takakuni and restore the shogunate. 2 years later, he died on Shikoku, still waiting for his saviors to come. Kanrei Hosokawa Takakuni wasted no time when Yoshitane departed, but quickly installed Ashikaga Yoshiharu as the new shogun. He was a son of Yoshizumi, the shogun installed by Hosokawa Masamoto back in 1493. Like Yoshitane and Yoshizumi, he would not have the privilege of governing the realm, but would be just another figurehead shogun, a puppet to dance when his master pulled the strings. The situation in the late 1400s and early 1500s in Kyoto strikes me in some ways as being very similar to the Nanbokucho War. Ambitious clans could back rival claimants and try their luck taking the capital or forcing the early retirement of recalcitrant shoguns who refused to play along. Just as the Nanbokucho War essentially disempowered the emperors in favor of their battlefield champions, so Sengoku Jidai would disempower the Ashikaga shoguns in favor of the Kanrei, or eventually whoever could field the most warriors, win the most battles, or intimidate the most enemies. Next time, we will take a break from the narrative and explore the different fighting styles, tactics, strategies, and organizations of the armies of the Sengoku period. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.